Hey there, bud. Coming back, yeah. I listen to let's see. It's the last thing we're listening to, Lights On with Jessica Denson. And this is jazz at the it's jazz. He's a mess, total humiliation. Fucker Carlson faces more humiliation after firing.
We have some news from within our Fox family. Fox News Media and Tucker Carlson have mutually agreed to part ways.
Wait, what was that?
That's
Fox News
sad.
Media and Tucker Carlson have mutually agreed to part ways.
Well, it's official, folks. Tucker Carlson, the used car salesman with a snake oil side hustle, has been fired from Fox News. It's a small victory for common sense and a giant leap for not having to listen to Tucker Carlson rant anymore. Tucker Carlson, the man who looks like he just discovered the joys of mayonnaise, has been kicked to the curb. And I'm not sure if you knew this, but Tucker has actually set a new record.
Tucker has officially achieved something that I don't think anyone else in our industry can claim. Being let go by all three major cable news networks.
One of those firings was the result of this moment on CNN's Crossfire.
It's not so much that it's bad as it's hurting America. So I wanted to
but
come here today
defense, let me,
and say...
Wait.
Here's just one of what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America. Your partisan, what do you call it? Hacks. I'm here to confront you because we need help from the media and they're hurting us.
What you do is not
honest. What you do is partisan hackery.
Accusing us of partisan hackery?
Absolutely.
You've got to be kidding me.
You're on CNN.
Say,
the show
that they
kidding me? Is puppets making crank phone calls. What is wrong with you? I watch your show every day. And it kills me.
I can tell you what.
It's so painful to watch. You have a responsibility to the public discourse. And
you
fail
need to get a job
miserably.
I think.
You need to go to one. Now, this is theater. I mean, it's obvious.
35. And you wear a bow tie.
Jon Stewart came on as a guest and humiliated Tucker Carlson so badly on his own show that it was canceled. So when it comes to his recent firing at Fox News, it feels like Christmas came early for anyone who's ever had to sit through one of Tucker's conspiracy-driven monologues. Tucker is like that weird uncle during the holidays who you try to avoid, but you can't help but listen to what crazy thing he'll yell about next. Tucker looks like someone who just stepped out of a 1950s country club. Actually, on second thought, Tucker looks like if Adele grew up to be a Fox News anchor. I mean, he's already got the snap-on hairpiece, the suits, and the empty stare that projects... I think I have opinions, but I'm not sure what they are. Though we definitely know Tucker's opinion on men tanning their balls.
Half the viewers right now are like, what? That's testicle tanning? That's crazy. But my view is, okay, testosterone levels crash and nobody says anything about it. That's crazy.
But beyond Tucker's laughable journalism, if you want to call it that, he's made numerous misogynistic, perverted, and racist comments during his tenure at Fox News. Like the time Tucker said immigrants were making America dirtier, which resulted in over 20 companies pulling their advertising from Tucker's show.
People debate all the time about mass immigration. What you never hear anybody do is make the economic case for mass immigration. But as an economic matter, this is insane. It's indefensible, so nobody even tries to defend it. Instead, our leaders demand that you shut up and accept this. We have a moral obligation to admit the world's poor, they tell us, even if it makes our own country poorer and dirtier and more divided. Huddled masses yearning to breathe free? Nope.
Or the time he defended statutory rape.
He's not accused of touching anybody. He is accused of facilitating the marriage between a 16-year-old girl and a 27-year-old man.
But
that's the accusation. That's what they're calling felony rape.
But in our state...
But
I'm sorry. Now, this guy may be a social maybe a child rapist. I'm just telling you that arranging a marriage between a 16-year-old and a 27-year-old is not the same as pulling a stranger off the street and raping her. That's...
Or the time that he said that women are extremely primitive and like dogs, which is now being used in a lawsuit brought against him by his former producer, Abby Grossberg.
I love women, but they're extremely primitive. They're basic. They're not that hard to understand.
Or his now infamous defense of the white supremacist replacement theory. You know, the one that says that immigrants and minorities are coming to America to replace white people?
An unrelenting stream of immigration. But why? Well, Joe Biden just said it. to change the racial mix of the country. That's the reason, to reduce the political power of people whose ancestors lived here and dramatically increase the proportion of Americans newly arrived from the Third World. And then Biden went further. He said that non-white DNA is the, quote, source of our strength. Imagine saying that. This is the language of eugenics. It's horrifying. But there's a reason why this policy is called replacement, the replacement of legacy Americans with more obedient people from faraway countries.
And with everything that he said in the past, the Murdochs have supported Tucker Carlson. I mean, it probably didn't hurt that Tucker was such a brown shirt. I mean, a brown nose.
For hanging in there with us through it all. If it weren't for you, we'd be long gone. We want to thank Fox, especially the Murdochs, for their unwavering support of this show day after day. God bless them. Lachlan Murdoch has taken over. Suzanne Scott, Jay Wallace running it day to day. The one thing they have in common, in addition to being really nice people, they are totally committed to the freedom of speech.
So what changed exactly? Why did Fox News decide just now to fire him? Well, according to an exclusive from the Daily Beast, Tucker was already pissing off Fox management between his conspiracy-laden coverage of the Jan 6 Capitol riots, including the repeated and baseless targeting of Trump supporter Ray Epps as being an FBI agent who instigated the insurrection, a looming lawsuit from his former producer Abby Grossberg alleging a sexist work environment, and his disparaging remarks about Fox brass and documents made public. Here's former Fox News producer Abby Grossberg describing her horrible experience while working for Tucker.
Tucker and his executive producer, Justin Wise, who was also fired, really were responsible for breaking me and making my life a living hell. So there is a feeling of justice, but it's only partial.
She also describes how Tucker was intent on spinning the January 6th footage to blame the FBI for inciting the riot.
It was ahead of my time there when the January 6th tapes were coming out. Tucker was very set on finding an FBI person who was implanted in the crowd and spinning this conspiracy that they were ultimately the ones responsible for the Capitol attack, not Fox News, as they're about to go into the Dominion trial, that it was really, you know, the FBI that set up this thing, not Fox telling the American people that the election was rigged and the voting machines did it. And when I went back to them and said, look, there's no conspiracy theory here. I called this attorney that's representing one of the Proud Boys, and he flat out told me on two occasions, there is no conspiracy. Get away from this stuff. This is dangerous. Tell Tucker to stop. I'll come on your show and represent my client, but I absolutely will walk off if he asks me this. And the response was, I'll find somebody else. Tucker is really intent on this. And that warmed my mental health, too, because by that time, I had really begun to connect the dots that the programming that we were putting on the air every night was not just generating business, but also generating hatred in the audience. And after January 6th, I had this wake-up moment that this is hurting people. People are getting angry, and people are acting out on that anger, and this is not okay, and I don't want to be part of that.
And according to Grossberg, she has more tapes.
Where are all of those recordings now? Did Dominion ultimately get them?
I have several recordings that I'm still going through that we've recovered from all of the phones. There are 90.
90 tapes? No wonder Murdoch and Fox News tried to cover this up and settle with Dominion. They are absolutely f***ed. And I wouldn't be surprised if those tapes found their way in other investigations against Trump and Fox News.
Is the DOJ one of those entities?
Yes.
And is it the special counsel? It would be the special counsel, yes. Interesting. And they contacted you first?
Yes.
Well, that was quick. Special Counsel Jack Smith has requested those recordings from Abby Grossberg's lawyer. And one of those recordings is this coup convo between Senator Ted Cruz and Maria Bartiromo.
Who's deciding who gets inaugurated?
It would be the results of that commission and what they found. And if they found credible evidence of fraud that undermines confidence in the electoral results in a given state, they would report on them.
He admits it. You heard the question there. So who decides who gets inaugurated? That's what this is all about, because you have a certified winner. You have all of the courts having passed up any potential challenge to that. So at that point, it was President-elect Biden. And Cruz answers that this fake, made-up, so-called commission that he and his Trump buddies were planning to try to create to bureaucratize a coup. That's what they were trying to do. That was his answer. That's how they would steal the race.
Oh, man, Ted Cruz is in some deep He might want to lawyer up right about now. And when it comes to Fox News, I honestly thought that Murdoch would have first fired boxed wine lover Janine Pirro and Muppet character Maria Bartiromo. But let's not give Murdoch too much credit. He's not exactly a hero for firing Tucker. After all, Murdoch's the one who created the monster that is Fox News, and is the one who decided that facts don't matter as long as the ratings are good. Murdoch firing Tucker is more like he's cutting off a limb to save the rest of the body. And let's face it, Fox News will continue to be a cesspool of misinformation and bigotry with or without Tucker Carlson. And now that he's fired, I know exactly what you're thinking. Gabe, what on earth is Tucker Carlson going to do now? Well, he could always give stand-up comedy a go, though he's not exactly known for his sense of humor.
Whoa!
Plus, the last thing the world needs right now is another mediocre white guy with a microphone. Or maybe Tucker will become a pathetic YouTuber like Tim Pool, Matt Walsh, and Ben Shapiro. I mean, he's
got a job offer from Russia already.
Terrible opinions thing down pat, so I'm sure he'd fit right in. But in honor of Tucker Carlson getting fired from Fox News, here are some other jobs that he could pursue. He could become a carnival barker, or a professional wrestler, or an infomercial host, or a professional conspiracy theorist, or he could just start screaming into a megaphone on a street corner. Though honestly, it's hard to tell the difference between that and a show on Fox News. Or actually, maybe Tucker will sign an exclusive deal with Rumble to become the host of their new cooking show, White Supremacist Kitchen, spelled with three K's, of course. A cooking show where the only ingredient allowed is mayonnaise, because anything else is too spicy and ethnic for Tucker. Who knows? Maybe Tucker will hit up Hunter Biden for a letter of recommendation like he did for his son Buckley Carlson. Or maybe Tucker won't even need it. He's already getting offers from places like RT, you know, as in the Russian state-controlled international news television network funded by the Russian government, which honestly might be a great fit since Tucker is already in love with Putin. Now, some Republicans like Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene are not handling Tucker's firing all that well. I mean, it's kind of pathetic, really.
One of the platforms you and I have used extensively is the Tucker Carlson Tonight program that sadly is no more on Fox.
Did you just hear her dramatic sigh?
Is no.
Actually, you know what? Considering Marge's past, I don't think we need to explore that sigh any further. Other Republicans like Lauren Boebert tweeted that she stands with Tucker Carlson, which I'm hoping means that she'll be standing with him in the unemployment line. Oh, and I just wanted to be clear that Tucker was not fired because of his political views. He was fired because he's a very expensive liability for Fox News right now, especially since Fox News already agreed to pay Dominion $787.5 million for defamation, as well as dealing with an upcoming $2.7 billion defamation lawsuit with Smartmatic. And let me remind you all that Tucker Carlson is not a victim. He did this to himself. Just like Trump being a moron is the reason that he's in trouble with the law. It's his own fault. Tucker is just a wealthy, privileged white man who's been given a platform to spread his hateful ideology. But in all honesty, I think Tucker should take some time to reflect on his terrible life choices. Maybe he could volunteer at a local food kitchen, or a homeless shelter, or who knows, maybe even a rehab center for people who are addicted to white supremacy. So farewell, Tucker Carlson. We won't miss your terrible takes, your even worse hair, and we definitely won't miss your weird, creepy laugh. And remember, folks, every time a Fox News host gets fired, an angel gets its wings. Well, until next episode, I'm Gabe Sanchez, and this has been... What Was That? If you enjoyed today's episode and want to support the work that goes into creating the What Was That show, you can join my Patreon at whatwasthatshow.com. You'll get access to early episodes, exclusive bits, behind-the-scenes content, access to the show's private Discord, as well as live Q&As to connect directly with me to offer up comments, questions, and suggested topics to be featured on the show. Thanks again for watching, and I hope to see you over on Patreon.
Pretty good. Yeah. This is time. Streamed 1 hour. Live jumps. Time is up as cases pile up. Lights on. Yeah.
We are all always in the prime of our lives. I'm Jessica Denson, and this is Lights On. No, Donald J. Trump, you're no star, and you can't just do anything. E. Jean Carroll, 79 years young, is proving some 30 years after Trump violated her that there is no running out the clock on truth and accountability. The only clock running out is impunity for the serial predator and former president, who is finally having his decades of misconduct against women tried in a court of law. This week, the legendary columnist took the stand in her defamation and battery case against Trump, testifying in detail under oath to Trump's actions in a department store dressing room in the mid-90s. She met the condescending cross from Trump's lawyer not only with credible emotion, but with unwavering fortitude and wit. facing the truth has only made Eugene wiser, braver, and more resilient. Trump, on the other hand, can't even muster the strength to show up in his own defense. That's unlikely to change when the trial resumes next week. And let's be clear. Trump is weak, not because he's old, but because he's a coward. He's spent his 70 years plus on this earth running from the truth. But from civil trials to criminal grand juries, he's at the end of that road. Yesterday, Special Counsel Jack Smith made history, obtaining more than 5 hours of testimony from his former Vice President Mike Pence. Pence was forced to testify to Trump's efforts to pressure him to overturn the 2020 election after giving up his own political bid to block Smith's subpoena, and less than 24 hours after Trump's last-ditch effort to block the testimony failed in a court of appeals. Never forget that before Pence upheld his minimum duty to the Constitution on January 6th, he stood behind his predator boss for 4 years while claiming to be a man of deep faith and family values. Calls to hang Mike Pence would have never happened if the so-called Christians surrounding Trump denounced him long before that day. But the former VP, like most of the GOP, fear Trump more than they fear God. Pence will continue to be a pathetic and morally equivocating presidential wannabe in public. But I think it's safe to assume that yesterday Jack Smith got some truly damning testimony about Trump from Pence behind closed doors. And from faithlessness to ugly ageism, not to mention complete recklessness when it comes to the full faith and credit of the United States, the GOP is showing how truly unfit they are to lead. This week, Biden launched his re-election bid, unapologetically, I love this, reclaiming the Freedom Platform from the fascist Republicans who have hijacked it for so long. It's a beautiful winning strategy, and Biden has been an unusually effective and competent president against enormous headwinds. I want to shine a light on the nasty and baseless attacks on Biden's age and how fit Biden really is to take on a second term and the dangerous fascists running against him. Last but not least, how can we forget that this week started with the ouster of Tucker Carlson, who is responsible for mainstreaming so much of this ugliness and hate. If you've watched Lights On before, you know that I know how this brainwashing and division works all too well. And I was absolutely thrilled to see his platform on Fox News come to an end. Stick around because I'm going to share an exclusive throwback moment that really brings the Tucker story full circle for me. And I think you'll really enjoy it too. So welcome to our luminaries. Welcome, Ben Mycelis, Midas Touch founder and my buddy sidekick. How you doing today?
You see, you are fully embracing what I said. I am the sidekick. I am the clear number two here on
the
show.
I lost that fight. The only fight I left was the fight to call Ben Mycelis not a sidekick.
And
so sidekick
I am
it is.
Proud to be a sidekick. And as we talk about what took place that you were just teasing that you're going to put at the end of the show, that you're going to show people that kind of throwback, I'll just say this, that you and I may have been in the same location, in the exact same room at that time, and we just had never met each other at that time. And for all those watching, Jessica and I go actually way back. We didn't realize it until we met when you first appeared as a guest on the Midas Touch podcast back over a year ago at this point, but definitely some kind of funny coincidences there. But Jessica, a really big week. I mean, you know, yeah. From the courage and the heroism of E. Jean Carroll to the, you know, I think the cowardice of Pence trying to avoid the testimony, but ultimately, you know, essentially losing and being ordered to show up. And to his credit, showed up, spent the whole day there, didn't invoke his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, to President Biden announcing his re-election, to Tucker being fired. How can we forget? It seems like a long time ago at this point, but the beginning of this week. And then just remember, just think about how fast things are moving, though, right now. Because on the last Lights On that we did, you had Jerry Filippatos, Abby Grossberg's lawyer here, and she played a major part in exposing the working conditions when she used to be an executive producer at Tucker Carlson, and she her lawyer shared all about that experience here. So if people want to go back and watch that last interview too, you did a great job with that interview. But excited for today's show.
Yeah. I mean, I think we absolutely cannot discount the role that Abby Grossberg played in the firing of Tucker Carlson. She and Jerry have both said they don't know the extent to which it actually factored in, but you put it together with all the revelations that came out of Dominion, and I think she absolutely had a role in that. There is some very damning information that came out about Tucker Carlson in her lawsuit, and it was so great to have Jerry. Yeah, definitely go back, check out last week's episode, and even the week before, where we really dug into it before we even brought Jerry on. But speaking of strong women who have been fighting to expose the truth, taking back their power, saying, I'm not going to stand for this, look at E. Jean Carroll. I am so inspired by her. And I love stories like this because we're going to get, in the end of this episode, to this ugliness of ageism. But I love stories that just show no matter how old you are, no matter what the number subscribed to you is, it is absolutely no indication of what you are capable of the courage and fortitude that you can express, of the impact that you can have. We know that Donald Trump has been accused by dozens of women of this kind of violating conduct that E. Jean Carroll is bringing to her defamation and battery trial, and yet he has never been put on trial for it before. And E. Jean Carroll found her voice. I mean, she was no, you know, shy, silent woman, but she... This was something that it really took her years to come to terms with sharing publicly. And you know, I think about this because it was around the same time that I filed my sex discrimination and slander harassment lawsuit against the Trump campaign in 2017. It was during the Me Too movement. And for E. Jean Carroll, It was a recognition that she could not be out there as this columnist for women sharing other people's stories and being dishonest about her own experience. And it wasn't, I mean, I would never put blame on somebody who had been through what she had been through for not feeling like she could come publicly forward with things like this. But it was seeing that courage and bravery of other women that inspired her back in 2017 to say, I have to step out. It doesn't matter how much time has passed. It frankly doesn't matter who's going to believe me or not. That's not the consideration here. The consideration is that I am now going to speak the truth and put it out there and move forward with accountability and look where we are. I mean, look what E. Jean Carroll has done. I couldn't help, as this trial is going on, thinking of Bill Cosby and the years and years it took for him to face accountability. And it's not normal. It is not. We can never forget the conduct that Donald Trump is credibly accused of by so many women, and what an aberration and just disgusting fact that Donald Trump was ever in the White House to begin with. And please, the irony is not lost on me. If you're watching this program, you know I lived in the Fox News echo chamber. I worked for Donald Trump in 2016 when the Access Hollywood revelations were coming out. I have certainly come to terms with my own denial, and I lived in that time in a space where I believed that all of the accusations coming out against him were false, because I was so deluded into believing that he was just under false attack by everyone. And you better believe that I have come to terms with my own ignorance and lack of seeing the plight of other women and recognizing the veracity of their claims. So I'm inspired by E. Jean Carroll. Like I said, it was the same time that I found that courage myself in 2017 because of the courage of other women and just people in general who had been in these suppressive and experiences where they had been violated, having the courage to come forward. And it may take time, but that time is worth it, and it is going to make a huge change and be one of the first really significant I think, rulings to drop in this chain of accountability that we are now on for Donald Trump.
So the E. Jean Carroll trial has progressed, I think, faster than many court observers are used to, and that's also because Judge Lewis Kaplan, the federal judge presiding over the case, runs a very efficient court and a very efficient trial schedule. So on Wednesday, jury selection was completed by lunch. They already picked the jury. 9 jurors selected, alternates as well, and opening statements began right after lunch. And so E. Jean Carroll's lawyers gave an opening, Donald Trump's lawyer, Joe Tacopina, gave an opening, and then testimony began right away. Testimony began into Thursday. There was a witness who had been at the Bergdorf Goodman, who worked there, who was able to discuss the layout, to explain for the jury and to kind of just paint a picture where the changing rooms are, where you enter, how celebrities would frequent it, which areas would be kind of quiet areas. And it's a very smart move to kind of paint that picture because the jurors need to be able to visualize that before you have E. Jean Carroll testify. And then putting your witness on, the main plaintiff on right away, though, is a fairly risky strategy because that's the case right there. And even if you have the truth on your side, the light on your side, the facts on your side, you know, E. Jean Carroll has been living and breathing this case and the trauma every single day of her life. And you know, Jessica, what it's like to be embroiled in a court case and so what I always tell my clients, you know, who want to, you know, thinking about filing lawsuits, I said, I just want to let you know, it is beyond a full-time job.
It's a massive undertaking, yes.
And then so after all of that, then it's her moment to testify, that she's just waiting for this moment. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do to prep for it. It's not like you can practice all your life testifying in front of a jury and what those circumstances are going to be like. It's very nerve-wracking. And the direct exam of E. Jean Carroll began good, you know, began okay. And then there was a moment, though, where E. Jean Carroll, I think, just even transcended the moment. Like, it was a magical moment, if you will. And I think it started happening on the end of the direct exam, but really happened when Joe Tacopina engaged in this really kind of disgusting cross-examination of her, where she recognized that the truth was on her side, that she recognized the facts were on her side, and she recognized that Donald Trump, for all of his bloviating bluster, was too scared to even show up in the courtroom. And she was there to tell her story. He was afraid. He wants to be a keyboard warrior and make all and post all of these messages about, you know, about her, which the judge called out. And the judge said, tell your client, Tacopina, if he keeps saying this, you may have to start looking into some criminal statutes. And for those watching, you see Roberta Kaplan and E. Jean Carroll. It's Roberta Kaplan on the left, E. Jean Carroll getting into the car there. And I think E. Jean Carroll, you know, really, she's been such a strong person. But in that moment, she found superhuman strength. And then she just, you know, basically was telling Tacopina, no, I'm ready to go, and what you're saying is outrageous. What you're saying makes no sense. You know,
now, let's just talk for a minute about how he greeted her. This was like, for me, as a juror, if I saw the way that he approached her, it would have been over. I don't want to say that. I mean, I hope the jurors maintain neutrality and, you know, weigh everything until the end. But, my God, talk about setting a condescending and just disgusting tone off the bat. So he comes in. He says to her, good morning, and she nods, and because she does not verbally acknowledge him, he says to her again, good morning, and waits for a response, and she, I think, possibly at that point verbally responds, and he says to her, there you go. There you go. Can you imagine, Ben? I mean, the insensitivity. I was actually, a couple weeks, I joined Popak and Karen on Legal AF, and we talked about the possibility that Tacopina was going to be cross-examining Jean Carroll. And that look and you would think in this position that they would get a female attorney to cross-examine E. Jean Carroll, but they didn't even. They have Alina Haba, but they didn't use her. They used Joe Tacopina, and as soft
they
as
have
he
Alina.
May try to make himself,
Haba.
Some of his questions were extremely condescending, and as we were talking about, when he started to really challenge her on why, for instance, she didn't scream, she really took him to task and said, I didn't have to scream. It was, to me, she stood up for herself in such a beautiful way, and so many other women, I think, that can relate, that have been through experiences like this, having this mansplaining, misogynist expectation of how they should act when they are being violated in this manner. I don't think so. And she did such a service, not just to herself, but like I said, to so many others who have these experiences.
So 2 points I want to piggyback off what you just said. Alina Haba, we've always heard her name, and she likes to do these interviews with all these far right-wing media companies where she's, talks a tough game, right? She hasn't said a word during the trial, and she likely won't say a word during the trial because she's not a trial lawyer. She's a total and complete phony. And she goes around and she says all these things, but when that cross-exam should have been Alina Haba's. You know, if you are representing, right? I mean, if you're the lawyer there representing Donald Trump, that and you went to all these media networks talking trash about E. Jean Carroll and how strong Donald Trump is, you take that cross-exam. You know, as a trial lawyer, you know, and she hasn't said a word. I doubt she'll say a word. I don't think she knows how to do a cross exam. I don't think that she knows how to do a direct exam. I don't think she knows the rules of evidence. She doesn't know what she's doing. There's a reason why she keeps getting sanctioned over and over again in the various cases. So that's one point I want to talk about. Two, so where does the E. Jean Carroll trial go next? So what happens now? So her testimony will conclude, and after her testimony concludes, then you're going to have other victims of Donald Trump testify about their experiences. They're going to play the Access Hollywood tape for the jury to hear, where Donald Trump brags about his vile and disgusting unlawful conduct. The jury will get to hear that. The jury will hear contemporaneous witnesses who E. Jean Carroll told what happened at the time, and Tacopina is going to try to cross-examine them, and then they're going to play the deposition testimony of Donald Trump that was taken. E. Jean Carroll's lawyers, Roberta Kaplan, they are not going to call Donald Trump as a witness. And you may say, well, why would they not call Donald Trump as a witness? Drag his ass into court. It's a brilliant strategy. Because Donald Trump did so bad at his deposition, you're able to play the full deposition. It'll be a video deposition the jury will see. And then I think after Donald Trump's deposition, I think that'll be the last thing they show the jury. Maybe, maybe not. But then they'll rest, and that'll be it. And then the judge is going to say in front of the jury, plaintiff rests. Defense, you may put on your witness. And then Tacopina is likely not going to call Donald Trump. He's not going to show up at his own trial. Mm-hmm. And so likely what Tacopina is going to say, because he has no other witness but Donald Trump, and in any other situation, the person who's accused would show up and would testify to the person, but Donald Trump isn't. And the judge is going to say, Tacopina, it's your, you know, your witness. And Tacopina is going to say, the defense rests. And I think you will hear an audible gasp amongst jurors when they realize, because they don't know now that he's not going to show up, that he's not going to even rebut anything that just happened. So then in the closing argument, Roberta Kaplan, E. Jean Carroll's lawyer, will go to the jury. You heard from her. Bravely, courageously had to talk about the most difficult moment in her life. You heard from other women who went through the same horrific situation. You heard from other women, E. Jean Carroll. You heard Donald Trump's deposition, and you heard in Donald Trump's, you know, you heard in his own words what he said that the reason that he said he couldn't do it is that she's not his type? Like, are you kidding me? And you heard him brag about it. And then, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, they had the opportunity. I'm sure you wanted to hear from him. And they did not call a single witness. This is a preponderance of evidence. 51%, if the scales of justice just tilt slightly in favor of E. Jean Carroll, you have to rule in favor of E. Jean Carroll. That's going to be the message, and I think it's going to be a compelling closing.
Yeah, and you look at, you know, just look, you're talking about Alina Haba. All she can do is be a performative attorney on television. She does not even likely know how to, as you were saying, conduct a cross-examination. And isn't that just a microcosm of the entire GOP and Trump MAGA party? I mean, they only do performance. They don't do actual law, governance. I mean, bring these antics of theirs to a court of law, and we're going to find out who's really who and what's really what now. And that's why I have been pushing for so long to use the justice system, because people are not the same in a court of law as they are on the street, as they are on TV, as they are in Twitter, as they are in these sham hearings that the, you know, House Fascist Caucus is putting on. They are required to conform to the rules of that courtroom, and they can be... They are in hot water if they do not follow those rules and speak the truth and engage in the baseline behavior that is accepted in a court of law. And this is the Law and Order Party, right? They love Law and Order so much. No, they really hate Law and Order. Law and Order threatens everything that they're about. So I'm so glad that we have E. Jean Carroll to kind of lead the way. I mean, this is really the first really publicized post-presidency trial for Donald Trump prior to these criminal trials. And look, it's a woman. It's a woman at like I said in the open, 79 years young, being this leader for women of all ages, I would argue people of all ages, to speak the truth like this in the face of this coward.
You make such a great point there that it is a microcosm of the performative aspect of just the Republicans in general. You want to talk a big game, you know, you got Jim Jordan, they put on the Judiciary Committee, he's not even a licensed lawyer, he rolls up his sleeves and he's like, here's what we're going to do. And then you've got like Stephen Miller, you know, Donald Trump's former aide, who starts an organization called like America First Legal, and they're like, we filed the civil rights case. They just like file these like bizarre and just frankly despicable letters to the EEOC suing companies that have diversity and inclusion programs, and they go, we filed the federal civil rights law. We filed a lawsuit. You wrote a letter to the EEOC so that Fox and your right-wing media can just talk about it. But you're right, Jessica, you put them in the arena. Now do something. Now build something. I know y'all like to just destroy and lie, but do something. Let's see it, Alina Haba. Show the world that you can do the most basic cross-examination, because you sure talk a tough game when you go on that, and she can't. And you see skill and confidence. I want to give, before going to the next topic, though, E. Jean Carroll's lawyers, Roberta Kaplan, and those and that team of lawyers is like...
Top-notch.
Best lawyering I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I mean, it is the way they did the opening, their directs, their candor to the jury about facts that the jury may not understand, the way they motion practice, it has been brilliant. So you have, again, a microcosm, right? Competency and actually doing versus trying to destroy.
Truth on your side. Yeah. You
I'm
going to
take a moment. I kind of weighing what I would love to share with our luminaries some more of what is happening this week, but I'm going to keep them in suspense a little bit, because the wheels are turning and we are doing the work. We are doing the work. But if you've watched the show from the beginning, you heard me talk about how I was kind of resistant and a little bit hesitant to put on a podcast. Part of the reason is because I'm still so embroiled in my cases against Donald Trump. I still have my initial 2017 sex discrimination and harassment case against the Trump campaign, and I still am working to certify the class so that all of the Trump NDAs are invalid. And this is, like you said, Ben, when you take on these cases, when you take on a lawsuit of any kind, not to mention a lawsuit or two lawsuits or multiple cases, as I have had, against a former president's campaign, it is an overwhelming responsibility. And this week was one of those weeks when I had an overwhelming amount of, let's just say, wheels to turn and things to be involved in my cases. And when I come on with you on Lights On, I'm coming here to you bringing my perspective. Ben, you're bringing your expertise and brilliance as a practitioner of the law. There's such a distinction, I think, between what we're doing, where it's so important to me when I put on this show to be genuine, to bring a real and heartfelt conveyance of what I have experienced versus the performance politics on the right that's on, you know, their cable news outlets, their fascist Russian propaganda channels, their podcasts, senators that are more concerned with putting on podcasts than actually governing. So I just wanted to share that with you because that's kind of what's going on in the background of Lights On is real legal work going on, like, in no small way. Major developments, and I'm going to share them with you when I can.
and look, you know, we've heard a lot of stories this week also about large media networks, legacy media networks that are failing, and they are massive cuts, they are going bankrupt, and, you know, I think one of the things that you show, Jessica, is there's actually the most obvious solution, the most obvious answer to what's going on with the right-wing hate. It's all looking us right in the face, right? And that's the love. That's the compassion. That's the intelligence. Large media networks feel they can't lean into that. And that's such a strange and odd thing because that is how you, in the past, all of the hate and authoritarians have been defeated with truth and love and rallying people around a common cause for pro-democracy. And look, there's a lot to be happy about this week as well. We're going to talk a little bit about Tucker Carlson being fired. We're going to talk about some major developments in Special Counsel Jack Smith's ongoing criminal investigation of Donald Trump. Former Vice President Pence testified before the grand jury in Washington, D.C. And, of course, we got to talk about how President Biden announced his re-election, and he's talking about freedom, freedom, freedom. We'll talk about all of that when we come back from this quick break.
I don't like to waste anything, but I never used to compost. I assumed it was too complicated, too time-consuming, and I honestly wouldn't have known where to start. Then I got a Lomi. Lomi allows me to turn my food waste into dirt with the push of a button. Lomi is a countertop electric composter that
senator because he was the president of the Senate, and I think Judge Jeb Boasberg, who was the presiding judge over the various grand jury proceedings now in D.C., was like, "All right, sure." It's like, "Sure, Pence. We'll say that you were the president of the Senate for the period of time." First, I am a Christian. Second, I am a conservative. And third, I am a Republican in that order. So if Donald Trump did indeed want to kill me, okay, if he wanted to do that, I'd have to ask myself, I'd have to consult my faith, I'd have to consult my family, and I would say, is he doing it because he is a Christian, conservative, or a Republican? If one of those things occurs, I'll have to say, you may hang me, Donald Trump. You may do that. I mean, you know, what's a total and utter complete coward, you know, but I'm glad that he testified. I mean, he argued the speech and debate clause privilege that he should be treated the same as a United States senator because he was the president of the Senate. And I think Judge Jeb Boasberg, who is the presiding judge over the various grand jury proceedings now in D.C., was like, all right, sure. Because of course, We'll say that you were the president of the Senate for the period of time where you were counting the electoral votes, but everything else you have to testify to. So basically, he had to testify on everything. And Donald Trump continues to assert executive privilege. He's lost that now. Donald Trump's lost the executive privilege argument like more than
so many times.
So after you lose it the first time in the Court of Appeals, it means you're going to lose it the second time.
Yeah.
And it definitely means you're going to lose it the third time. And by the fourth time, you know, it's just beyond frivolous. And Donald Trump continues to lose that argument. But he tried to, again, delay it. But look, the Court of Appeals knew what he was doing and very quickly ruled against him. And then just think about the timing of this, right? Was it on Wednesday we got the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals ruling rejecting Donald Trump's appeal to try to block Pence's testimony? And then, like, literally less than 12 hours later, boom.
Yep.
That's how quick they got him in there to testify. Yeah. 12 hours. He may have had to fly in from another state, too. But, you know, they're not playing around there. And great work by Special Counsel Jack Smith. What else we got, Jessica?
I got a question for you, Ben. And this is a question that I get, but I'm also, I want to know this. And I think the public, this question never gets answered. So we have all of these pending criminal indictments coming against Trump. We know that he was not actually arrested, or he was not actually taken into custody. He's not being held for the crimes in Manhattan that he's facing trial for. What, if any, crimes coming out of either Fulton County, Fonnie Willis, the RICO indictment, potential RICO indictment, or obstruction of a congressional proceeding, obstruction of justice in the Mar-a-Lago documents, any of these January 6th or Mar-a-Lago related potential charges, what, if any, when they are brought, could actually force Trump to be brought and into custody and held?
Brought into custody, I think a lot of these federal charges specifically, he could be brought temporarily into custody. I mean, potentially, you know, when the Manhattan District Attorney, when the grand jury voted to criminally indict, I mean, technically, they technically arrested him, right? So that was a temporary period where he was in custody. He wasn't thrown in a jail cell. But frankly, I doubt that any of the crimes, there will be an obligation that, like, he's held without bail. Now, the Manhattan District Attorney's charges, the very nature of the class of those felonies was such that anybody who would be charged with that would not be held in general. It's a no-bail crime. So he wasn't being treated differently than anybody else with the same felony class. Now, if you're being charged with espionage or obstruction of justice by the feds, or if you're being charged with a RICO or racketeering, like I think is what the Fulton County charge is ultimately going to be, those would be things that you'd have to post bail for. And ultimately, I think for all of them, Donald Trump would negotiate, you know, what that number would be. And I think ultimately he would have to post not an insignificant number.
But there's no charge that would supersede bail, that would require him to be held without bail.
I'll put an asterisk on it in the sense that I am not an expert on Fulton County criminal procedure and
come on, Fonnie Willis.
I'm not like deeply, you know, in terms of like what their bail requirements are, but I could say as a general matter, I believe that both for Jack Smith and for Fulton County, what Trump would argue and the judges would accept is that, given that he's a high-profile person, given the security that exists at Mar-a-Lago, given that his movement is monitored, that that as long as he posts, and it probably won't be an insignificant amount of bail, that he'll be able to be, you know, released pending his trial date. But the reality is, if you look at other January 6th insurrectionists, it's been on a case-by-case basis. There have been a number of insurrectionists who have been on house arrest. There's been a number of insurrectionists who have conditions placed on their travel. But I could envision something with the DOJ, there being restrictions on him traveling outside
of Mar-a-Lago, restrictions traveling to foreign countries. So I can imagine restrictions being imposed like that, but I don't believe any of the crimes that he'll be charged with would have him in jail while, you know, before he actually goes before a jury.
Yeah, I think a lot of the country just looks at this. I mean, it just feels so inequitable still because, you know, there's so many people in jails and prisons across our country for so much less minor offenses than Trump has been accused of and maybe charged, or Trump is being investigated for and maybe charged with. Yeah,
but think about it like this, though. Think about it like this, though. I'll say this. Like, the New York Attorney General case against Trump, and that's a civil case, it's not a criminal case, has moved faster than any civil case I've ever seen in New York, and I think that most New York practitioners will tell you. The fact that Letitia James filed that case in September of 2022, and you have an October of 2023 trial date where Donald Trump's being sued for at least $250 million, so is his adult children, which would shut down the Trump Organization from doing business. That case has moved faster than any civil case I've ever seen in New York. I think things are moving quickly now on the various other cases. Like you mentioned, Jessica, at the beginning of this, though, like the case that you brought was from 2017. We're in 2023. Like, I'm sure you would have wanted to go to trial if you could have in 2018 and not have it last until...
It's a combination of incessant delay tactics from the Trump campaign, including, you know, massive retaliatory actions, you know, illegal NDA enforcement, $1.5 million arbitration demand, illegal, you know, $50,000 judgment that I had to overturn. I mean, massive, massive gums in the works, and trying to move venues, all sorts of delay tactics on top of a fairly slow, I think anybody who's familiar with state court in New York would agree with me, just court system, generally speaking. But FYI, that 2017 case, we're filing a note of issue. We are wrapping up our final depositions, filing a note of issue on May 31st of this year, and then our case will get in line for trial in New York Supreme Court.
No, that's great, and everyone needs to remember what's lining up right now. Like, let's imagine Donald Trump was just charged with 30 plus felonies from the Manhattan District Attorney's office, right? And the Manhattan District Attorney is still investigating other felonies, the fraudulent financial valuations, which are subject to the New York Attorney General's civil case, which is set to go to trial October 2nd of 2023. So Trump's charged. You've got the New York AG trial. You've got the E. Jean Carroll trial. You've got Fawnie Willis in Fulton County, who's going to indict him between July 11th and September 1st. And I believe very serious RICO and racketeering charges. Then you have Special Counsel Jack Smith, who I think is going to criminally indict during a very similar time frame there. And so that's just some of the cases that Donald Trump's going to, have to deal with. By the way, I think around this time next week, we may have a verdict in the E. Jean Carroll trial. So we'll keep people we'll be on verdict watch around that time as well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, speaking of, let's see, moving from legal to political, and we started off with just the resilience of E. Jean Carroll at her age. We have just the most ugly, ugly, hateful, hateful suggestions coming out of the fascist GOP, those like Mike Pence who don't have the moral courage to really condemn Trump but think they can reinvent themselves without ever having taken a moral stand. One of those prime examples is Nikki Haley. She came out this week and essentially very explicitly implied that Biden was going to die before the end of a possible second term. Can we play that clip, Salty? This is so disgusting.
You know, that he's running again in 2024. And I think that we can all be very clear and say with a matter of fact that if you vote for Joe Biden, you really are counting on a President Harris, because the idea that he would make it until 86 years old is not something that I think is likely. It's why I've continued to say we need to have mental competency tests up until starting at 75.
There's just so much there. It's so incensing. First of all, she was conflating physical and mental competency that I would argue she has none of. But you know, I mean, suggesting that this man who is in quite excellent physical shape for his age is just going to die before 4 years from now. I mean, I had my great-grandfather, and if we can, you know, just imagine the time that was, it was life expectancy was not what it is today, was rollerblading when he was 95 years old. My other great-grandfather got married, remarried when he was 100. To suggest that somebody's life is going to end at that point is such a ignorant, hateful, ugly suggestion. I mean, Nikki Haley has come forth, you know, like this, you know, she's going to be the woman representing the Republican Party. And as she's taking on this, what she wants to be a female platform, she's so forward with her ugly, ageist platform that just really has no place. I hope that I wish that more people in the media confronted this ageism with the same kind of pushback and moral authority that we would confront any of the isms, racism, sexism, anything. It's so, so gross.
They're not talking about any issues.
No.
They're not talking about anything that they are going to do. You know, they're either have these like very personalized, hate-filled, discriminatory rants. I won't even get into what happened in some of those committee hearings. You could watch the hot takes, you know, that I did on that. You know, or you have them talking about bathrooms and, you know, and pronouns and Mr. Potato Heads and the green M&Ms and Dr. Seuss and, you know, and all of these things. And it's like really weird and disgusting that these MAGA Republicans like just wake up in the morning and all they want to do is talk about genders. Like that's all that's on their mind. You know, is who's using the bathroom? It's like, okay, can we talk about jobs? Can we talk about working conditions? Like, can we talk about equality? Can we talk about healthcare? Can we talk? Let's shift.
Yeah.
Let's focus on real issues, please.
Yeah. I was just going to say the truth of the matter is that Biden's in, first of all, he's in excellent shape for his age. The guy bikes all the time. He's a svelte, you know, in excellent physical shape. Look at Donald Trump, for God's sakes. I mean, just as a point of comparison for the self-care and fitness that someone can have at a certain age versus, you know, the condition of Donald Trump. But the only thing that Biden's age really speaks to is the only way it has affected his presidency at all is in a positive way. From his years and years of experience, years in the Senate, years as a legislator, being able to work with people to get things like the bipartisan infrastructure act passed, like the PACT Act, all these things that Republicans oppose that are hurting our veterans, like the spontaneity. You remember, Ben, you were hosting live coverage of it, the State of the Union address, when Biden, in so spontaneous, so impromptu, basically held the Republicans' feet to the fire in real time, making them commit to not putting Social Security on the chopping block in these debt limit negotiations. I mean, the guy's on top of things. There is no realistic or credible challenge to his mental competency based on his age, and it's really gross that they would go after him in that way.
You know, sometimes I think, when I think holistically about the Midas Touch Network, and I think about what one of the main things that large media networks have been in terms of their both sides in the issues, you know, they want to force these debates, and they want to force these debates on the terms of the MAGA Republicans and basically shift the Overton window of acceptable discourse to basically normalize these conspiracy-fueled, hate-fueled positions of them, right? And so what they'll do is they'll put on one side of the screen a MAGA Republican just saying something outrageously false and a crazy conspiracy theory. And then on the other side, they'll put someone who's representing the Democratic side. But frankly, it's not even like a political position, like just someone representing kind of normalcy, right? And then they'll have them debate it. And then the person on the MAGA Republican side will basically be like, well, I have the freedom of speech to have this debate. So do not shut down this debate. You think that I don't even have the right to have this debate? We should have a free and open discussion on what's taking place. And meanwhile, they're saying the most outrageously false things, but they say it with a way that's like, and everybody knows that the NRA is the reason why the Civil Rights Act passed. Everybody knows no one has done more for black people in America than the NRA and by the Second Amendment defense. Everybody knows that. And I don't know if you saw this interplay between Vivek Ramaswamy